From the Water Main, this is an American Public Media documentary. In Lake Charles, Louisiana, thousands of people are struggling to find homes or get back in their homes a year after a huge hurricane hit the city.
They called and told me my application was denied.
FEMA denied more than two-thirds of the applications they received after the storm.
If anyone views that as a success, then we have set the bar incredibly low.
The people of Lake Charles dipped into their own pockets to help neighbors.
We don't know. We're not sure where we're going to go right now.
If y'all find a hotel room, just call me back and I'll pay for it.
Well, Mike, this is sort of that double whammy when it comes to hurricane season this year.
Lake Charles was hit by another hurricane and two more disastrous storms.
The challenges that we are seeing today are the very types of events that we expect to become more intense and more frequent in the future.
Coming up, In Deep, one city's year of climate chaos. First, this news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. The Taliban say they're ready to take full control of the airport in Kabul once the U.S. military pulls out of Afghanistan. That's according to Reuters news agency. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports the State Department says it doesn't expect a functioning airport right away.
The U.S. has been talking to the Taliban, Qatar, Turkey, and others to try to make sure there's a smooth handover of the airport and airfield. State Department spokesperson Ned Price says it's in everyone's interest that there be a functioning civilian airport.
With the U.S. military set to depart by August 31st, I think that it is probably unreasonable to expect that there will be normal airport operations on September 1st.
But he says the U.S. and allied air traffic experts have been laying the groundwork for a resumption of civilian air services as quickly as possible after the U.S. leaves. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
A new study out of Britain has produced the strongest evidence yet that the Delta variant of the coronavirus tends to make people sicker than the strain of the virus that triggered the global pandemic. NPR's Rob Stein has more.
The Delta variant is about twice as contagious as previous versions of the virus, and some studies have suggested it may also tend to make people sicker. But the evidence for that has been mixed. In the new study, researchers analyzed more than 40,000 COVID-19 cases that occurred in Britain between March and May. The researchers found that those who got infected with the Delta variant were about twice as likely to get so sick they needed to be hospitalized than those who caught the Alpha variant. It's the largest study to look at this question. Other researchers say the findings help explain why hospitals are getting overwhelmed, especially in places where a lot of people aren't vaccinated. The study found no increased risk of getting hospitalized among those who were vaccinated. Rob Stein, NPR News.
Hurricane Ida continues to gain strength as it makes its way toward the Gulf Coast. Forecasters say Ida could come ashore as a powerful Category 4 storm. The White House quickly approved the Louisiana governor's request for a federal emergency declaration. We get the latest from Aubrey Juhas of member station WWNO.
Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards declared a state of emergency Thursday night after forecasters announced they expect the state's Gulf Coast to get a strong direct hit late Sunday night or early Monday morning. Edwards also requested the federal declaration of emergency. It's the standard sequence of events before a storm even makes landfall. Depending on the damage from Ida, Edwards could upgrade his earlier request to that of a major disaster declaration. Edwards said the storm's impact will likely be compounded by the state's fourth surge in coronavirus cases, which is ongoing and has been the most deadly to date. For NPR News, I'm Opera Juhas in New Orleans.
This is NPR News in Washington. The House committee investigating the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol building is demanding records related to the insurrection from 15 social media companies. NPR's Shannon Bond reports lawmakers want to know how the tech companies handled false information and other problems.
The Select Committee wants the social media companies to turn over records related to the spread of misinformation, domestic violent extremism, foreign influence, and efforts to overturn the election, dating back to the spring of 2020. It also wants to know what the platforms did or didn't do to respond to these risks. Many of the hundreds of people arrested in connection with the January 6th insurrection planned and documented their activity on social media. The committee's requests went to the biggest platforms, Facebook and Google, which are among NPR's financial sponsors, as well as smaller sites popular with Trump supporters like Parler and Gab. The committee is giving the companies 2 weeks to respond. Shannon Bond, NPR News.
The man who assassinated Senator Robert F. Kennedy has been granted parole. Sirhan Sirhan, who is now 77 years old, has spent more than 50 years behind bars for Kennedy's murder. According to the Associated Press, members of the Kennedy family spoke in favor of his release during a parole hearing near San Diego today. In 1968, Robert F. Kennedy was a top candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination when he was gunned down at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles just moments after delivering a victory speech in the California primary. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Klaviyo, working to help brands deliver personalized email and SMS campaigns that drive revenue and create genuine customer relationships at klaviyo.com/NPR.
So, it is early Monday morning, May 17th. This is the day that the city of Lake Charles is going to start its final round of debris pickup from the hurricanes.
So, which way should I go?
We sent a team of producers to Lake Charles, Louisiana. They spent months talking with people in Lake Charles about the city's struggle to bounce back from a terrible year.
Here's another pile of debris. It looks like things from the inside of the house, like ceiling panels and like
walls, I think. Like sheetrock?
Yeah, sheetrock.
A massive hurricane hit Lake Charles in August of 2020, and then another hurricane hit in October. And here it was 7 months later, and the city hadn't even finished cleaning up debris. Lots of houses were still a mess, unlivable.
I can make out like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 roofs with blue tarps. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
It always rains a lot on the Gulf Coast, but this day, it really started to pour.
And you can hear how heavily it's raining.
Alrighty, so this road is only a two-lane, so I'm just driving really slowly now because it is completely covered.
The storm turned dangerous.
Tornado warning for Lake Charles, Louisiana. That just came through on my iPhone. Take shelter now in a basement or an interior room on the lowest floor of a sturdy building if you're outdoors. Or in a vehicle, move to the closest substantial shelter and protect yourself from flying debris. So I'm going to say let's turn around and let's go inside. Yes. Can you hang a left and get out
well,
that way?
I don't want to go down that road. It looks pretty bad as well.
Okay.
I'm just going to try to turn around.
Storm zone tonight. Lake Charles, Louisiana, getting over a foot of rain in just 24 hours.
During this storm, Lake Charles flooded again. One person died, trapped in his car. Sewers were still blocked by debris from the hurricanes. Some people who'd managed to save what was left of their belongings from the hurricanes lost them in this surprise flood.
We're going to have to throw it all away. Everything is going to have to go.
This is In Deep, one city's year of climate chaos. I'm Renata Sago. Lake Charles, Louisiana, had 4 federally declared weather disasters in a 10-month period. People in Lake Charles were still cleaning up from one storm when the next hit, and then the next, and then the next. The parade of storms left thousands of people with homes that nobody can live in. The city pleaded with the federal government for help rebuilding, but what they got was limited. Many families were left to figure things out on their own for months. What's happening to the people in Lake Charles raises questions for the whole country. Climate change will make severe storms more intense and more frequent. Experts say we need to prepare for a future where disasters pile up and don't allow us time to recover, when federal agencies and local aid groups can't keep up. This is a story of 3 women trying to keep their families and their community afloat, and what happened when disaster threw them together. Reporter Lauren Rosenthal takes our story from here.
In the spring of 2020, the early days of the pandemic, Dominique Darbone filmed a backyard concert behind her house in Lake Charles. Dominique was lead singer of a big local cover band called Flamethrowers, with her husband Joseph on guitar. In the video, it's just the two of them. Joseph is strumming on the lawn next to Dominique while she sings and bounces their baby.
The last one we're going to do for you guys is called Allergies. It is our son Beau's favorite song.
Allergies. Allergies.
Lake Charles isn't a huge city. 80,000 people tucked partway between New Orleans and Houston. It's a big party town that's also home to lots of petrochemical plants and refineries. Dominique grew up in Lake Charles, and it's where she was raising her own two kids, working part-time and singing in the band. Her roots in the city went deep.
I feel tied to this community. I've just always felt like this is where I belong.
When Dominique got word last summer that a hurricane was bearing down on her city, she got worried. Hurricanes are a fact of life on the Gulf Coast, not always a huge deal. But this one sounded serious.
Unsurvivable storm surge. We hear...
Forecasters said it would be strong enough to push seawater all the way into Lake Charles, an hour's drive from the coast. The city could get up to 15 feet of water. Dominique didn't want her family to be around for that. She made plans to stay with relatives a few hours away.
When we left town like 3 or 4 days before the storm came because I just had this gut feeling.
Laura came ashore in late August of 2020 with winds of 150 miles an hour. It's one of the strongest hurricanes ever to hit the U.S. At least 40 people died in Texas and Louisiana. But the storm surge that was predicted mostly missed any cities. It almost seemed like Lake Charles might have gotten off easy until the people who lived there came home.
This shit is honestly unbelievable.
Dominique took this video on her phone the day she got back to her house. You can see down trees on her block, broken power lines. On the video, Dominique is in shock.
This is everywhere. There's not a single part of town that I've laid my eyes on or passed through that doesn't look like this.
Inside Dominique's place, it wasn't much better. In some spots, the roof had given out and rain got in. Furniture, floors were all ruined.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm not really sure why I hopped on Facebook Live to show you guys this. I guess I just, solidarity. Love y'all. And I'm so sorry to everybody that's coming home to the same scenario. It is just like, it sucks. I guess we just get to work now.
As bad as Laura was, it came pretty early in the 2020 hurricane season. Scientists had expected it would be busy, but 2020 broke records. There were so many tropical storms, scientists burned through their list of names in record time and had to switch to Greek letters. In early October, just 6 weeks after Hurricane Laura hit Lake Charles, another storm, this time with a Greek name, started tracking that way.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. This is Mayor Nick Hunter, and the topic at hand is Hurricane Delta.
In this video posted to Facebook, the mayor said Lake Charles residents should prepare to get hit again with heavy rain and hurricane-force winds.
And this is not a bad dream. It's not a test run. These are the cards that we have been dealt.
Delta flooded neighborhoods and soaked already damaged homes. The back-to-back storms revealed structural problems at Dominique's house that weren't covered by insurance. Repairs would cost $80,000.
And I mean, I guess worst case scenario, if we absolutely had to live in here because we didn't have another option, we could. But it rains in here. There's bugs. It's a mess.
It wasn't just Dominique's family in this situation either. The hurricanes had damaged at least half the housing in Lake Charles and the surrounding parish. 3,000 homes were left unlivable, and families scattered looking for a stable place to stay. The rapid decline of Lake Charles' population became national news. In just 1 year, more than 7% of its population had left. Schools lost students, and homes throughout the city looked abandoned. But Dominique had this feeling that not everyone who'd seemingly dropped off the map was actually gone.
I think some of them are probably still here. They're just not in secure housing situations. They don't have an address. They're not at their job because their job doesn't exist.
Lake Charles is a city with deep residential segregation and income disparities between white and black families. The storms threatened to make those existing inequalities worse. When we analyzed insurance data from after the hurricanes, at the end of 2020, money was flowing faster to parts of the city that were predominantly white or higher income, including Dominique's neighborhood. Dominique's family moved in with relatives while they figured out what to do next. Being displaced from a damaged home was stressful, but Dominique knew she was lucky compared to others in the community. Over the next few months, that thought would stick in her head. She was lucky. All around Lake Charles, people had lived through the same series of events, with some starting out in a much more precarious position than others.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Before the hurricanes hit Lake Charles, Roisetta Sibley O'Zane's life was about as packed as one person's can get. She was working full-time with multiple side gigs, a single mom of six.
Get out, Mama. My youngest is three.
I got a glimpse of what it was like the first time I called her.
I'm taking four of the kids.
She was loading up the car for her daughter's basketball playoffs.
My 16-year-old, he won't be going because he has a track practice today. Oh,
the baby of the family, three-year-old Cash, burst into tears.
He just woke up. So Cash, look at the phone. This y'all are like in my life right now, the chaos. He's crying. I have to get them dressed.
Roisetta told me her story this winter over Zoom. She'd been raising her family in a federally subsidized rental home just outside Lake Charles when the first hurricane rolled in. Life was hectic, and Roisetta was also recovering from an illness, a severe bout of COVID-19 that took weeks to recover from.
In fact, when we had to evacuate, I had coronavirus.
She was still technically under quarantine at that point, but given how serious Hurricane Laura looked, Roisetta felt she didn't have a choice. She packed up the kids and drove them to a hotel in Houston.
So I had to go in their hotel and check in as if I didn't have COVID and just quarantine in a hotel room because I had nothing else to do. Me and my children were going to be sleeping in a car.
They stayed at the hotel for days, waiting for word that it was safe to go back to Lake Charles. Eventually, a friend got in touch and let her know it looked bad. A tree had fallen on Roisetta's home, but the landlord was promising to fix it up.
My house was damaged and deemed unlivable, but they came in and they fixed my roof. So I no longer had the hole in the roof. So I was like, okay, yeah, I can go home.
Roisetta moved her family back to the old rental house. What they found there wasn't good. The leaky roof had destroyed Roisetta's furniture and some of her appliances. The plumbing was all messed up. Roisetta didn't have anywhere else she could stay, and she couldn't afford to find a new place or fix these issues on her own. So she did what more than 240,000 households across Louisiana would wind up doing in response to the hurricanes. She went to FEMA.
The mission of the Federal Emergency Management Agency is to support our citizens and first responders to ensure that as a nation, we work together to build...
In the disaster recovery process, FEMA is mostly expected to do two things. First, to provide funding to local governments for cleanup and rebuilding projects. And secondly, to give money directly to survivors, with an emphasis on people who didn't have insurance to cover their losses. People like Roisetta Sibley O'Zane.
Examples of this include housing assistance, which is provided for home repair, replacement, temporary housing, and in rare instances, permanent construction.
Roisetta didn't know it at the time she applied, but there were two big problems brewing with FEMA's housing programs in Lake Charles. The first had to do with the application process itself. FEMA usually offered people the chance to sit down with an employee and explain their cases or get their houses inspected in person. But that wasn't an option due to the pandemic. Almost everything had to be done online or by phone. And for some families who lacked access or know-how, that slowed things down a lot. When families did hear back about their applications, more than 70% of the time, the answer was no. People got denied aid for all kinds of reasons. Their homes weren't damaged enough. They didn't submit the right documents.
Raishana said she did get some aid from FEMA, a little over $6,000. But that was meant to cover the cost of evacuating with her kids, replacing their damaged stuff, and finding a new place to stay. When she moved back home, she asked FEMA for help with rent.
They called and told me, because I went back to my damaged dwelling, my application was denied.
That's right. Raishana claims FEMA denied her additional aid because she moved back into a damaged house. If she decided to move out and rent a new place, which she couldn't afford, FEMA would reconsider.
I was so in shock that I didn't even react. You're going to punish us because we're going back to our home so that we can live our life. Like, we can't stay away from it forever.
FEMA programs like the one Raishana was trying to get help from usually favor people and communities that were wealthier to begin with. Academic research has found racial disparities, too. More aid money flows to whiter communities, and they're more likely to gain wealth as they recover. Communities of color are more likely to lose out. We tried to get demographic data from FEMA for the Lake Charles storms, but they said they didn't have it. Raishana wasn't sure what to do about FEMA, and she definitely wasn't the only one. Throughout the fall and winter of 2020, Lake Charles Mayor Nick Hunter said he went back and forth with the agency about the other side of their housing program in response to these storms. FEMA was supposed to provide temporary housing in the form of RVs, campers, and FEMA trailers to help families with severe damage to their homes. But the mayor said FEMA's setup kept getting delayed. At one point, the agency announced it could take a full year to finish moving families in.
I don't understand how anyone can view that as a success when you have survivors who are asking FEMA for help and it's taking over a year to get them the adequate, sustainable housing they need. If anyone views that as a success, then we have set the bar incredibly low.
There also weren't that many units to go around. About 2,400 households would eventually move into a FEMA trailer or RV after the hurricanes. Do the math, and that's just 1% of the families that initially approached FEMA for housing help. 1%. Without access to local housing or even a clear timeline for when FEMA could supply it, a lot of families left the area. Others stayed, some because they couldn't afford not to or had nowhere else to go. Raishana made do at her damaged house, but she didn't realize exactly how common her situation was or how serious it had gotten for some families until winter really set in. And Raishana was asked to help survey hurricane damage for the nonprofit where she worked. It was January of 2021.
So I was driving around in the neighborhoods just taking pictures, but I was encountering several homeless people and several families who were sleeping in their cars, in their front yard. They didn't have anywhere else to stay.
Emergency shelters were closed due to storm damage or the pandemic. Doubling up with family or friends wasn't always an option. And Raishana knew rents in the area had jumped. Lake Charles was set up for a tough winter. And in early February of 2021, things took a sharp turn.
Much of the country tonight is bracing for a major blast of winter and bone-chilling cold, with Arctic air expected to descend all the way to the Gulf Coast.
In Lake Charles, the forecast called for several days of slush and ice. Temperatures would drop to their lowest point in decades and stay low. Snowflakes.
Look at these temperatures, 23 at Lake Charles. Dew point.
As Raishana checked the forecast, she started to panic. What about all the people she'd met through work who were sleeping outside?
How are these people going to survive if this polar vortex is coming?
To Raishana, it was a life or death situation. Without thinking, she got on Facebook and started posting. If you know someone who needs a warm place to stay ahead of the freeze, you can contact me. She had no plan for what would happen next.
I'm a single mom of six. So I really didn't know how I was going to be able to do it, but I had the desire to, you know, make sure these people were safe and nobody froze to death.
Raishana reached out to some friends and started putting together a volunteer crew. She wanted to go back to those unhoused families in Lake Charles and make sure they had somewhere safe to stay. That meant canvassing on foot in freezing temperatures. Across town from Raishana, someone else was trying to figure out how to help.
Dominique Darbone, the singer you heard from earlier, whose house got wrecked.
I just kind of had this, pardon me, but oh shit moment that if it really got freezing, we had a lot of people in our community that were going to be in pretty serious trouble.
Dominique wanted to know if any groups were working on emergency housing to get people out of the cold. When she looked on Facebook to see who was involved,
Rashetta's name kept popping up, and she was posting her private information on pages and saying, like, if you need somewhere to stay to get out of this weather, like, let me know.
Dominique and Rashetta can't remember who reached out to who first. Their memories of the days leading up to the storm are a blur.
I don't even know how we connected. Was it in a comment section or something? Like,
it was God.
On Valentine's Day, Dominique and Rashetta agreed to meet in person for the first time. They got to work, using social media, word of mouth, to find people who are still in damaged houses or living in their cars or tents. They started booking hotel rooms for those people, out of pocket.
Like swiping our card, you know, so much to where my bank actually froze my card and was like, hey, is this fraud? What's going on?
Then we went to the grocery store and bought a couple $100 worth of groceries for the people that we'd put up in hotel rooms. And that is how our love affair started.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
The storm lingered for days, and Dominique and Rashetta kept going. When they ran low on money to book hotel rooms, other community groups chipped in. They also turned to Facebook, where they posted videos pleading for donations from anyone watching.
You need a receipt? We can give you a receipt. Whatever you need, just we need help.
For the next few days, these posts circulated widely over Facebook. But as money came in, so did more requests for housing from as far away as Texas. In 1 week, Dominique and Rashetta said they helped more than 300 people find temporary shelter. Rashetta said it was grueling.
I'm a mom. She's a mom. Our babies were crying, and we were just like, we're going to get this done. We were literally up all night trying to make sure we met every need.
It's impossible to know how many lives an effort like this actually saved. But the cold weather in February was catastrophic across much of the South. In Lake Charles, this was the third weather disaster in less than 6 months. And it seemed like this one was made worse by the ones that had come before. Dominique and Rashetta had come across a handful of neighborhoods during the freeze where the storms had taken a severe toll. One was a low-income apartment complex, and the other was a small community of retirees.
The need was so great because those people were still living in their homes, but the homes were damaged. They didn't have water. So we started helping them, and it just kind of started snowballing.
Dominique and Rashetta agreed. They wanted to continue providing aid in the community once the weather warmed back up and winter turned into spring. Their names and contact information were already out there, and the requests for help just kept coming in. But remember, Dominique and Rashetta had just met. They were doing everything by the seat of their pants. And if they were going to help all these people, then they'd have to scale up.
Hi, everybody. So
just a few days after the deep freeze, Dominique and Rashetta posted this video to Facebook. It's the two of them standing near a huge 18-wheeler truck with donations from other groups.
So if you all know a specific location that could use blankets, baby blankets, cleaning supplies, oh my God, it's so much stuff.
Not only that, we don't have a place to store it because it's just us.
Just us.
Okay, thank you.
Dominique and Rashetta gave themselves a new name, Vessel Project.
We have just finished up our very first food distribution, Vessel Project food distribution.
In March, a little over a month after the freeze, Dominique and Rashetta posted this video to Facebook. They're standing in another parking lot lined with empty milk crates.
Y'all, we got rid of 1,600 food boxes today, and I don't even know how many gallons of milk. It was an incredible community effort.
In the midst of everything, Dominique live-streamed this video from the driver's seat of her car.
Good morning, Lake Charles. I just want to pop in for a quick update.
While Vessel Project was branching out in all sorts of directions, people were still coming to them, asking for shelter.
We have paid for two families out of pocket to stay in hotel rooms this week. So if you want to help support the work we're currently doing, message me or message Rashetta.
You're listening to In Deep, One City's Year of Climate Chaos, a documentary from The Water Main at American Public Media. Coming up,
FEMA has determined you are not eligible for continued rental assistance because you do not own or rent a traditional form of housing.
I was in a tent. Who is additional rental assistance for if it's not for people that are stuck in tents?
More in a moment. This is APM, American Public Media. From American Public Media's Water Main, this is In Deep, One City's Year of Climate Chaos. I'm Renata Sago. Dominique and Roichetta were strangers who came together to house people during a dangerous winter storm in Lake Charles. You're about to meet the third woman in this story, a person who became homeless during this year of disasters, a person who came to rely on Dominique and Roichetta when the government turned her down. Reporter Lauren Rosenthal continues our story.
Yeah. Alexis Sheridan and her fiancé, J.J. Jones, sat on the pavement outside the front entrance to Walmart, right next to the metal racks where people returned their carts. They were eating some lunch, telling us about their week.
We were at our friend's house yesterday, and her neighbor brought us some gumbo out and some clothes, all kinds of stuff. It was cool.
Alexis and JJ were stuck at this total dead end when we met them. It was May, and they said they'd been homeless for 5 months. The storms damaged their rental house in Lake Charles. They stayed for a while, but according to them, the landlord finally pushed them out over the winter. Alexis and JJ alternated between hotel rooms when they could afford it and sleeping outside when they couldn't. This week, they'd been camping on a walking path down by the local lakefront.
Yeah, we've been on concrete for 3 nights, like this.
Alexis patted the hard ground next to her.
This is what we've been sleeping on, like this.
Her bike was parked nearby, loaded down with crates and all the bags of her belongings she could carry.
We have 3 little blankets right there in my bag. So I put one on the ground, and I put one as a pillow, and then we put one over us because the bugs have been tearing us up.
It was especially uncomfortable for Alexis because she was pregnant. Nearly 7 months along, she rubbed her belly as we talked.
We sprayed bug spray everywhere, but I didn't want to spray it on my tummy, and I wasn't sure, you know, how much soaks in. And
being on the street was getting harder the longer it went on, physically and emotionally. Alexis had struggled with addiction and previously lost a child to state custody. Alexis and JJ needed to stay sober and stable to get that child back. After their home was damaged in the hurricanes, they had trouble finding a place to stay together. So they bought a tent and pitched it in an acquaintance's backyard. Vessel Project had helped shelter Alexis and JJ during the winter storm in February. Now they continued helping where they could. Dominique and Raichetta paid for hotel stays sometimes, and they gave the couple a new tent.
People that don't even know each other, I've never met them in person.
The reason why Alexis was at a dead end when we met her was because of trouble with FEMA. The agency had given her a little over $1,600 for rent right after the hurricanes. When she asked again, this time for a trailer or help renting a new place, she was denied. Alexis pulled out her banged-up smartphone and showed me the letter FEMA posted to her account online.
I'm going to read it out loud.
FEMA has determined you are not eligible for continued rental assistance because you do not own or rent a traditional form of housing.
I don't get it. I was in a tent. I mean, I rented before. You know what I mean? Like, who is additional rental assistance for? If it's not for people that are stuck in tents when they used to have homes.
Alexis was locked in this endless chicken and egg dilemma that was actually built into the FEMA system. You couldn't get rental assistance unless you actually had a place to rent. But Alexis couldn't afford to get into a new place without FEMA's help. So there she was, pregnant, homeless, and stuck. Alexis told us she hadn't lost hope she'd find new housing, but it was daunting.
My biggest fear right now is, you know, my baby being born, I don't have nowhere to go, and I still have issues that I have to address, too, you know, in the meantime.
Her sobriety, her custody case, it was a lot to manage, on top of the stress of finding a safe place to sleep each night. As we talked, the sky darkened and a heavy thunderstorm rolled in.
The thunder and lightning is like right overhead. The whole sky's lighting up. There you go.
Alexis and JJ looked worried. They had that new tent from Vessel Project that they could use to stay out of the rain, but they weren't sure where they could camp with it in the city without trespassing or drawing attention from police.
I should call the police station and say, Where can I set up a tent for tonight if legal?
Alexis was serious. She wanted answers from someone in charge, but her cell phone was out of minutes. So she borrowed my phone and called the local sheriff's department.
Yes, I have a question. We've been homeless since the storm, but we've been, like, literally sleeping outside for the last 3 nights. Someone gave us a tent today, the Vessel Project. Do you know where it would be legal to set it up? I'm, like, almost 7 months pregnant, and I just want to be safe and not get in trouble.
A few minutes went by. The dispatcher asked if Alexis could go to a homeless shelter, but they were all closed or not accepting families. They kept talking.
Okay, thank you so much. What is your name?
Alexis hung up.
He said if I can get to a hotel, he'll pay for it.
Huh?
The operator at the sheriff's department.
What?
He said if I can get to that hotel, he'll pay for it tonight out of his pocket.
Did he say he had a price limit?
No, he just said that whatever hotel I could get to.
There was a chain hotel just around the corner where Alexis and JJ had stayed before. It was raining hard, so they locked up their bikes and loaded their bags into our car.
Right here. Right after this.
Where'd that car went? Follow that car.
We pulled up to the hotel, and Alexis ran inside.
Okay, Alexis is coming back, shaking her head. What's up?
The room was too expensive, and the dispatcher didn't want to pay for it. Alexis bounced right back. She said she knew a cheaper hotel across town, so we headed there next. Alexis came back from the front desk at the second hotel, hands thrown up in frustration. No luck here, either.
So,
he has to be here. She can't take the payment over the phone.
The clerk at the front desk said rooms had to be paid for in person. Alexis borrowed my phone again and redialed the sheriff's department.
Hello? Hey, is there any way that I can come meet you or you can come meet me?
The sheriff's department was just down the road, but I could hear the dispatcher through the phone as he told Alexis no. He didn't have cash for her to pick up, and he couldn't leave work either.
Okay, I didn't know. Okay, thank you so much.
Sorry, good to help you.
It's okay.
All right, bye-bye. Alexis stared out the window. We'd spent hours together that day, talking about her and JJ's life since the storms, talking about what it was like to be in this standoff with FEMA. For the first time, Alexis seemed deflated.
It's every day, nonstop. Like, you'll get a little bit of hope, and then bam, every time. It's aggravating. It just doesn't, it wouldn't aggravate me as much if I wasn't pregnant, you know? Because my baby's going through all this with me, and that sucks. I'll cry a little bit, but we stay laughing most of the time. And it's just a shame. Like, really? You can't take a payment over the phone?
She shook her head and said she needed a minute alone.
Thank you.
When Alexis came back, she said she and JJ were prepared to sleep outside.
We're just going to have to get wet.
They knew a parking lot at the local civic center downtown that had a big canopy set up over it.
It says Homeland Security.
They'd been using it for COVID vaccination clinics. We pulled up to the Civic Center and into a huge open lot. And there was the big white canopy, long enough to fit a few cars underneath it.
We might just lay there with our blankets, or we might set our tent up under there and then pull it out, you know, to the other part.
Yep,
I just don't want y'all to have to keep being out, too.
We set up the tent. As Alexis got settled inside, she told us she needed money to buy more cell phone minutes, and Dominique from Vessel Project was willing to help. She asked us to tell Dominique where she was so they could meet the next day.
All right.
Okay.
Bye. Thank you all for everything.
We ran back to our car. As we drove away, we could barely make out Alexis and JJ's tent under that big white canopy in the rain. The next morning, our producer Jamie and I went looking for Alexis and JJ.
Have you seen them? Pregnant woman and a man with a long gray ponytail?
We found them in front of a Wendy's downtown. It had been a long night under the COVID vaccination canopy.
That thing was popping and creaking, and I was like, and then I wake up and I'm like, they have water barrels holding it up. Like, it wasn't going anywhere.
It didn't go anywhere, but Alexis was still exhausted and a little sore. We brought the couple back to Walmart, where they'd left their bikes the night before. The bikes were still locked up safe. An envelope was poking out of one of their saddlebags. It was a note from Dominique.
I'm sorry I missed you today. Hopefully I will be able to meet you soon.
Tucked in the envelope was money to buy more phone minutes.
Please message me the number on the phone of the phone that will be on. Love to you three. Put a heart. That's so sweet.
All I was thinking about last night was Alexis and where they were and hoping they were safe.
We went to see Dominique and Raichetta that same day to hear about what was happening with Alexis's case and where things stood with their own organization, Vessel Project. Raichetta and Dominique's houses were still damaged, so we all met up in Dominique's parents' backyard.
I think that was yours.
There was a swimming pool next to a covered seating area with a bar and tons of lush houseplants.
Is there anything else I can get you guys?
As we settled in, Dominique and Raichetta gave us an update on Vessel Project. The group had raised at least $30,000 during the winter storm and burned through it until there was nothing left. Almost all of their money had gone into booking hotel rooms for families who were displaced.
Once we started looking at receipts for hotels and saw how much money we spent.
Well, and the emotional roller coaster of doing that, it's not sustainable for us at this point in our organization on all levels. Like, we can't keep asking community members to take money out of their pockets to do that.
Booking hotel rooms out of their own pockets wasn't sustainable either. Dominique and Raichetta were still dealing with damage to their own homes, and hotel rooms also weren't a permanent fix. Dominique and Raichetta wanted to focus on providing more long-term solutions through Vessel Project, like helping people with FEMA cases or raising enough money to help come up with rental deposits. It was just hard to shift their focus, knowing there were still people out there with immediate needs.
There are some situations sometimes where it's like, it makes us sick to our stomach, you know.
Alexis and JJ were in one of those situations. Even though Vessel Project was tapped out, Dominique and Raichetta were still willing to help this couple with money from their own pockets. Dominique said she had to pay for the couple's phone minutes.
Because we want to get them into a FEMA trailer because that's the next step and we can't do that without the phone. And so I needed them to have the money to pay for the phone. So this is a situation where Alexis and them are doing everything that they can.
So they're calling me.
As we talked, Raichetta got a call from Alexis and JJ on their newly functional phone.
Hello.
Hello, hey.
Hey.
Phone, it's on 15%. They let us charge it for a little while.
Do y'all have somewhere in mind that y'all are going to stay?
Ma'am?
Do you all have somewhere in mind to stay at for the night?
We don't know. We're not sure where we're going to go right now.
If y'all find a hotel room, just call me back and I'll pay for it. Okay, but I have to go because I'm doing something right now. But
yes, ma'am. Find I'm so busy, but God bless you and thank you so much.
It's okay. Find the hotel room and just
I'll
text
talk to you
me.
Later.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Alexis called back a little while later, and Dominique grabbed her credit card fastest. We watched as she used her personal funds to book a hotel room. Alexis and JJ had shelter for the next two nights.
What was that question y'all asked earlier about us paying for hotels?
So this is one of those conditions where it's like they slept outside in a deluge last night. You know, we, Vessel Project, doesn't have money, but I can afford to pay for a hotel room for two nights for her. Because they don't deserve to have to do that again.
Dominique and Raichetta both felt frustrated. They felt like the small group they formed in the wake of the winter storms was now expected to take on any case that involved urgent, unmet needs. There were a lot of those cases.
And we don't want to be the catch-all net. We want to catch the people who fall through the gaps of the big organizations, but we don't want to catch everything that's out there.
Raichetta and Dominique weren't experts and weren't getting paid to provide this help. Both of them were juggling other jobs and kids. But as time wore on, Dominique and Raichetta had realized that government agencies had actually started referring people to their organization. The government was sending cases their way, and their organization was mostly just the two of them.
You're missing something if we still have to be called. If you are supposed to be the emergency organization or FEMA, then there's a gap somewhere. Something is being missed. So what is it and how can we talk about bridging that gap so that organizations like us aren't needed in the next disaster?
They were good questions. And beyond that, I didn't understand exactly how Alexis Sheridan had gotten caught in this trap of being denied housing assistance by FEMA because she lived in a tent. If we wanted answers to these questions, we needed to ask FEMA.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. I'm John Long.
Hi.
I asked the agency for an interview, and they put me in touch with John Long, the FEMA officer in charge of coordinating the state and federal response to the hurricanes that hit Lake Charles. I drove to meet him at a big concrete building in Louisiana's capital, Baton Rouge. We talked about the recovery in Lake Charles for over an hour. Eventually, I brought up Alexis Sheridan and the problem she'd had getting help from FEMA.
I have to tell you her story because I haven't been able to make heads or tails of it. She was living in a tent. She didn't qualify for rental aid. And until now, up to now, is not aware that she's being considered for direct housing assistance either.
The FEMA officer said, yes. Based on the details we provided, Alexis Sheridan had been denied assistance for good reason.
We give you 2 months up front to pay your rent, to pay your deposit, get you going. And then to continue it, you have to show receipts that you're spending the money on rent. So if you go buy a tent and camp in somebody's backyard, you've made a decision that, yes, has made you ineligible for continued rental assistance. Now, that's not to say that there's no assistance available.
He said community groups and faith-based organizations could help fill the gap for a person like Alexis.
We're trying to look at a whole situation and come up with solutions based on what that individual's, you know, situation is.
As we sit here and speak, she's being housed in a hotel that's being paid for by a grassroots organization that's two women, just two people. Her hotel room is being paid out of pocket by one of the women from this organization that FEMA is apparently referring people to. Is that how this system is supposed to work?
You just know the system is not designed to be that way, but there usually are reasons why, you know, people have fallen through the cracks or aren't being helped by the system that's in place.
That system, he said, included non-congregate shelters, basically just hotel rooms that were rented out to keep households separate amid the pandemic. People were allowed to stay there weeks and even months after the hurricanes. But by the time Alexis and JJ heard about this offer, they figured it was too late for them. Instead, they'd evacuated to a friend's house and were back in Lake Charles within a day of that first big hurricane. They stayed put for the second one. Anyways, John Long with FEMA tried to turn the question around.
You know, I would have to ask you, why wasn't she in one of the non-congregate sheltering hotel rooms all along?
It's their fault?
Well, it's not necessarily that it's their fault, but again, it's a business of people and people have to communicate and make things known.
I asked him to clarify, but our interview ran over. He was out of time.
When you say business of people, what do you mean?
We're going to have to wrap this up.
John Long was right about FEMA's policies. There are people FEMA can't help because of the way the agency is set up. And in general, FEMA's role after a disaster is narrower than you might think.
We have this, I think, sort of mistaken imagination of FEMA as this all-powerful, you know, federal government savior, when in fact it's not.
Garrett Graff is a journalist who's written a lot about FEMA. What the agency is best at, he says, is getting things organized right after a disaster. Supplies and people from all corners of government. FEMA has money to support some rebuilding activities, but it's mostly up to others to get the work done.
Part of what a lot of people misunderstand about FEMA is this lack of resources. And so FEMA is usually the reimbursement people, they are not the people doing it.
Government is intentionally limiting how involved they are in the recovery from a disaster.
Samantha Montano is an emergency management professor at Massachusetts Maritime Academy.
Kind of in their ideal creation of this, nonprofit sector is doing the vast majority of the work in recovery.
This is an important idea. Basically, Montano says government has divided disasters into two parts, response and recovery. Response is immediate, getting people out of danger, providing drinking water, getting the lights back on. Recovery is longer term, rebuilding houses from start to finish, getting people into new rentals, helping out with transportation. The government likes to focus on response, the immediate reaction to a disaster. And Montano says they expect private groups, like Vessel Project, to take care of a lot of the longer-term work, the recovery.
Sometimes the presence of those mutual aid groups are interpreted as there having been a failure of government, right? The reason that there is a need in that community is that the government didn't come in and meet that need. And that's true, but also the presence of these mutual aid groups really are an extension of this expectation that the nonprofit sector is going to be the ones that are meeting the majority of these needs when a disaster happens.
When one single disaster happens, not several all in a row, if disasters pile up like they did in Lake Charles, Montano said she'd expect nonprofits would have a hard time maintaining the resources and the volunteers to help like they did in Lake Charles. So this is the system we have. Government isn't trying to help everyone. The hope is outside groups will lead the way and provide the bulk of the resources to people recovering from serious losses in a disaster. The question is, how will that system hold as climate change makes these disasters more frequent? In Lake Charles, Rochetta said, the system didn't keep up.
Everything that could happen was happening, and we were just put on the back burner, and people forgot to go back to the pot on the back burner and take care of it. So we're just kind of burning here.
According to Gabriel Vecchi, a professor studying climate change at Princeton University, it's impossible to look at what happened in Lake Charles over the past year and say it's all because of climate change. That's not how this science works.
It doesn't take a lot of imagination to understand that the challenges that we are seeing today are the very types of events that we expect to become more intense and more frequent in the future.
Stronger hurricanes, 100-year floods, and so many events so close together in one place, like in Lake Charles, is something we could certainly see again.
What is unambiguous is that it happened. The plans should reflect that sort of these multiple events could happen.
And that these weather events could be much worse than we're used to. Back in the 80s, the U.S. used to see two or three disasters a year that did more than $1 billion worth of damage each. Last year, we had 22 of them. It was a new record. The Biden administration has pledged to get out in front of this. They've put up more money than the country has ever spent on climate resilience projects, basically trying to fix weak spots in infrastructure, shelter, basic services, to make cities less vulnerable in the future. It's going to be $4.5 billion. For comparison, the damage from last year's record-breaking disasters was close to $100 billion.
They had us move because apparently the president is going to be entering right over there.
On a clear, sunny morning in May, President Joe Biden headed to Lake Charles. His motorcade was going to take him right through the city's beat-up downtown corridor, past Dominique and Rochetta and their signs that read, "Federal aid now, bring our citizens home."
Anxious, hoping that somebody hears our cry for help in our area, because Vessel Project is out of money and, you know, we're still getting calls.
Biden's people said he was coming to promote his infrastructure bill. Lake Charles had a bridge that needed to be replaced. But the city had been begging for more money to help recover from the storms. Congress had to authorize it, but Biden could get the ball rolling. It seemed like this was Lake Charles' chance.
I hope I can continue to feel hopeful and not, you know, him come and leave and then it's like, you know, nothing happened or nothing changed.
Eventually, the motorcade appeared. The president arrived down at the lakefront. He stepped up to a big podium and began to speak.
You know, I know the times have been tough here. The damage of the hurricanes have been devastating.
Biden said he knew the region wanted more help from the federal government.
I believe you need the help. We're going to try to make sure you get it. But the people of Louisiana always have picked themselves up, just like America always picks itself up.
He said Lake Charles would rebuild.
I promise you, we're going to build back better than ever, more resilient, and build back in a way that all we build is better able to withstand storms and that are becoming more severe and more frequent than ever.
He didn't say how that rebuilding would get done or who'd pay for it. And he didn't make any promises about whether Lake Charles would get extra aid. Biden finished his speech and left. Weeks went by. Still, nothing. We called Dominique and Rochetta in June. They were disappointed the president's visit didn't seem to change anything. but they also weren't that surprised. While they'd been waiting to see how things panned out for Lake Charles, both of them had made real progress in their own recoveries from the storms. FEMA had finally given Roichetta a trailer.
We love the trailer. They provided it, you know, as best they could for me and my six children. But we know it's not home and we're ready to be home.
Roichetta was expected to be out of the trailer in a few months, and she wasn't sure where she'd go after that. Dominique, on the other hand, had gotten a low-interest loan from the federal government. It paid for a new ceiling, a new frame, all those big structural repairs.
We're getting the chance to actually, like, rebuild the parts of our house that are dysfunctional. So that's good.
It was good, but Dominique had still been struggling. We could hear it in her voice. She told us she'd started to wonder if her kids really have a future in Lake Charles if these storms just keep coming. Roichetta told us it was wearing on her, too. She already had trouble accepting there'd be times when Vessel Project couldn't get people the help they need.
I feel like whenever we're actively helping people, and I feel like it's a purpose. And so whenever we cannot do that, it makes me really, really sad. And Dominique always feels like, you know, it's something that I'm upset with her or not. And I'm just like, it's just me trying to figure out, how am I going to do this again tomorrow?
I don't feel like you're upset with me. I don't want you to feel like that alone. I just love you and care about you. And I just want you to be okay because you're my best friend.
Vessel Project is still doing aid work in Lake Charles. At the end of July, Alexis Sheridan, the woman Dominique and Roichetta had been helping through her pregnancy and homelessness, gave birth to a son. Alexis is working on getting an apartment an hour outside of Lake Charles for her family. It's been a year since the first big storm in this series that hit Lake Charles. A year of hard work and exhaustion and deep frustration for Dominique and Roichetta and Alexis. But a year that brought them together. Now, it's hurricane season on the Gulf Coast, again. You've been listening to In Deep, One City's Year of Climate Chaos, from the Water Main at American Public Media. It was reported and produced by Lauren Rosenthal. Our team included Jamie Hobbs, Christine Liao, Corey Suzuki, Annie Baxter, and Chris Julin. Digital editors, Andy Cruz and Dave Mann. Fact checker, Eric Ringham. Mixing by Johnny Vince Evans. Original theme music composed and performed by Jelani Bauman. Special thanks to Lauren Humphrey, Catherine Winter, Samara Freemark, and Sasha Aslanian. The managing director and editor-in-chief of The Water Main is Chris Worthington. I'm Renata Sago. You can read more about this program on our website, thewatermain.org. This is APM, American Public Media.
Each week, Harpistry shines a spotlight on music of harps from all over the world. Tune in Sunday at midnight or Monday at noon, right here on KRVS.
Next time on Hearts of Space, we return to the devotional heart of Middle Eastern music with interior journeys by Zikr Project, Michel Bonabila, Anwar Brahim, Dafer Youssef, Paul Avgerinos, and Omar Farouk Tekbilek, and more. I'm Stephen Hill, a program called Sufi Soul 3 on the next Hearts of Space.
Wednesday nights at 11 on KRVS.
You're listening to KRVS. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media or on the web at krvs.org.
Hey y'all, I'm Reagan, and I host Punk Piro here on KRVS 88.7 on Thursday nights at 12 a.m.
Support for KRVS comes from LUS Fiber, recently awarded a $3.1 million grant for the expansion of 100% all-fiber broadband into rural Acadiana. The grant will fund the expansion of LUS Fiber's network into portions of Lafayette, St. Martin, and Iberia parishes. For more information on how you can get fiber into your home or business, visit lusfiber.com.
This is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.